You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
The NBA playoffs are here, and with FanDuel, your group chat's about to be going off. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets if you win. And with live bets, your heart emojis will really be racing from tip-off to the final buzzer. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid faster than your friends can send you a victory gift. Or is it GIF? Who cares? You won! So get the word out to your crew and download FanDuel today. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets if you win. Make every moment more with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Official partner of the NBA.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
It's time to meet the Muppets, so let's turn on the mic for Muppet Show beginners and experts alike. Come on and join the party that's only just begun. Let's smile for a while, it's time to have some fun.
We're taking in a show tonight, play the music, light the lights, raise the curtain up, and then
it's time to meet the Muppets all over again. So take a break and take a load off. Let's all take a ride in a Muppet-tastic time machine with Fergie as your guide. So no more hesitation. Let's start the episode.
We're moving right along. Let's get this show out on the road.
Get the show on the road.
Hello, oh, hello, oh, hey, hey. Hello, oh, hello, oh, hey, hey, hello, oh. What's up, y'all? What's up? It's me, Fergie L. Philippe. Welcome to It's Time to Meet the Muppets, episode 104, talking about Connie Stevens. But before we break into that, what's up? How's everybody doing? Hope everybody's had a lovely couple of weeks. For those who don't know, this show is running on a bi-weekly schedule. We don't release an episode every week. We release an episode every other week. Maybe that'll change, but that's kind of the way that I've been doing it for right now. That's just the way that it works for my schedule. But I hope everybody's been enjoying the episode so far. Thank you to all those who have already commented and followed the podcast wherever you get your podcast, whether that's Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever. Please continue to talk about the podcast, share the podcast, tell all your friends about it, and please keep commenting and rating and reviewing. Follow us on Instagram at Meet the Muppets Pod, @MeetTheMuppets. Oh, guys, I'm really bad at my job. At MeetTheMuppetsPod. Wow, what a mouthful. Like I said, I hope everybody's doing well. Things are good over here. I'm excited about today's episode. Connie Stevens is actually one of my favorite episodes of the first season. I had a really fun time. I hope I have not said that every single episode. It's very likely that I have, but I'm going to try to refrain from saying hyperlatives like that. Hyperboles. I was thinking superlative. Hyperboles. But I really do like the Connie Stevens episode. There's a lot of fun stuff that happens here. Kind of taking a break from form. Not going to do a Muppet history lesson today. I wanted to talk about some stuff before we jump in. And I have a little bit of not corrected history, but clarified history. I kind of said it correctly, but now I've found a way to just kind of clean it up and say it for this episode. But before we get into all that, you know, it is no secret. Everybody has seen so much of the hatred and violence being shown towards the AAPI or Asian American Pacific Islander community in America. And it's not new. It's, you know, always been around, but it's really started to kind of showcase itself publicly for the past couple of years, and especially you know, in recent years, ever since we as a country have been dealing with coronavirus, and you know, from the horrible and truly terrifying shooting that happened in Atlanta, to the older woman who was attacked the other day, to just, you know, everyday racism that many of my AAPI friends have discussed on their various social media pages or to me personally. It's horrible, and I hope that all of us, that includes myself, are taking the time to really reckon with what our responsibility as people, as Americans, as allies, as friends, what we are doing to make sure that we are contributing to a anti-racist society that covers everybody. You know, the AAPI story is one that is very not well known. So making sure that we are reading up on our history, that we're reading up on ways that we can help. I'm going to be providing a link in the show notes to an article from New York Magazine that provides a lot of links to different organizations and different GoFundMes to different people who were affected by, people who were attacked, and unfortunately some people who were killed and their families, so that you could help in any way that you can. Please consider donating. There are a lot of good people out there trying to do some really wonderful work, and they need your help and they need your money. So every little bit counts, you know. Don't ever think that you're donating too little. Please consider donating whatever you can. In addition, you know, there have been, as far as I know, 3 mass shootings now within the past week or two. Obviously, the pandemic does not prevent people from having access to firearms, and unfortunately, due to the gun laws in this country that still need to be tightened for some reason, we still haven't had a real national reckoning or a real national discussion about how we handle gun rights in this country. And by gun rights, I mean, how can we responsibly be a society that owns guns so that somebody doesn't walk in, buy a gun, and then later that day shoot up as many massage parlors as they can within a few hours. Call your senators, call your government officials, read up on any protests that might be happening if that is something that you are... I don't want to say into, but if that's something that resonates with you, going to protests, and if that's not, you know, making calls, writing emails, and, you know, reading about organizations who are all about really being serious about gun laws and voting. God, please vote. If you are not, please vote. It makes such a difference and will really prevent things like this, as was very clear after the elections. Both the Senate race in Georgia and, of course, the presidential election back in 2020. And last but not least, it's also the week where Derek Chauvin, I can't really remember how to pronounce his name, I think it's Chauvin, is on trial for the murder of George Floyd. Do whatever you decide to do in terms of that. I'm personally not engaging in that. But simply remember that in any conversation that you decide to engage with people when it comes to this, is that George Floyd is the victim. He's not the one on trial. He lost his life. The thing that we can never lose sight of is that an officer killed an unarmed man by pressing his knee into his neck for 8 minutes, nearly 9 minutes, with his hands in his pockets, like it was nothing. And that's what's on trial. That moment. And what it means to be an armed officer and to treat somebody that way and to kill somebody that way. I mean, kill somebody, period. I don't specifically mean in that way. I'm just saying, I'm truly, you know, if you can't hear it, I'm just at a loss for words, because I still don't know how to say anything about that entire situation. And I just can't stop thinking about George Floyd's daughter and his family and all those who have to, who were associated with that entire thing and have to re-traumatize themselves by following this trial and have to watch people twist and manipulate so that they can absolve themselves from the heinous crimes they've committed. One of the reasons I started this podcast was because I really was having a hard time finding purely joyful things to be purely joyful things that were produced for the sake of joy. So while I'm not necessarily sorry, I'm sorry, you know, but these are important issues to talk about, and there's nothing about any of this work that ends today. You know, it is a lifelong commitment, anti-racist work and the work of making sure that all humans are treated equally, that we are making sure we're looking out for our fellow man, and that includes gun control laws, that includes a number of things, that includes being and making, you know, our brothers and sisters informed about voting rights. You know, then there's, you know, there's a bunch of voter suppression BS happening out in Atlanta. I mean, there's so much to talk about, but I wanted to talk about those few things. And obviously, all those who are AAPI, I am thinking of you and I'm sending you love. Once again, I've posted a link into the show notes so that you can help out in any way that you can. Moving away from that, I wish that was a lot of, I wish that was more precise and concise, but it's one of those things that I've thought about almost every single day since the summer, and I still am having a hard time putting it into words, because it truly, everything that has happened since 2016 and what has come to the surface is just truly mind-blowing. Let's talk about some puppets. Let's talk about the Muppets, because that will help, you know. This episode, we got Connie Stevens. Connie Stevens, actor, director, writer, producer, cinematographer, editor, and singer. Thank you, Wikipedia. Known for her work in, like, Rockabye Baby, Party Crashers, Grease 2, classic film, Tapeheads, and more famously for her role of Cricket on Hawaiian Eye. Connie and the Muppets actually first worked together back in 1971. Bernie Brillstein booked Jim Henson and his Muppets for the Tom Jones special that filmed, and Connie Stevens was one of the guest stars, and they worked very, very well together during this, so she was kind of an obvious choice when it came down to filming those two pilot testers. This is the information I was talking about earlier. So this is the clarified chain of events for the Muppet Show. They made the two tester pilots for ABC. They were turned down both times. CBS pitch reel turned down, yada 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 yada. Jim made the deal with Lord Lou Grade out in London while they were filming SNL, so they took a hiatus from like January-ish to like all of January, basically. And they went out to London. They filmed the Juliet Prowse episode and they filmed the Connie Stevens episode as kind of tester pilots. They came back to the U.S. to finish out the season over at SNL and finish out Sesame Street. And they spent from February through the end of April kind of reviewing and working through all the stuff that they filmed, seeing what they thought worked, and really just refining and tightening the show as much as they could. And then they went back in May, starting with Joel Grey, and started filming the rest of the show. And so we were kind of out of whack, and, you know, there was a lot of discrepancies about which, when, and where, and whatever. But today was the Connie Stevens episode, which aired in the UK April 16th of 1977. And then in New York a couple months before that. But the Connie Stevens episode is, you know, really interesting when you kind of watch it right after the Juliet Prowse episode. You can kind of see And then after the Juliet Prowse episode, going into the Joel Grey episode, you can really see the progression of what they take from the first two episodes and how they incorporate it into the next few episodes and throughout the rest of the season, and how much they kind of taught themselves, you know? So it's really great. It's really, really great. So let us begin. We go into the theme song. Finally, 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 a bad joke from Fozzie. A truly, truly bad joke from Fozzie. Very thankful. I feel safe now. And then at the end, Gonzo breaks the O completely in the Muppet Show sign. We get out of the theme song and we go into kind of Kermit's introduction into the opening number. I keep going back and forth with this. There's obviously plenty of evidence of Kermit performing on the show. Kermit performs on the show all of the time. There's something about the way that he performs in this opening number, which is Lydia the Tattooed Lady. There's something about the way that he performs in this that for me is so interesting and a very clear sign of them in their early stages, not in a negative way, just in a sense of like, what exactly is Kermit's function on the show? And I personally have been watching a lot of Saturday Night Live recently and reading a lot of books and listening to a lot of podcasts about sketch writing and character writing and all these different things. And the one thing that I think for a lot of comedy writers, not all comedy writers, but one thing that I love about comedy writers is how willing they are to take risks, you know, and just see what is going to work and what isn't. And I talk about this all the time with Jim and his work, is that he was not precious about it. Like, he really was trying to just see what was going to work and what wasn't. And for this number, you know, Kermit is obviously kind of this, he's like the lead singer of this number, but it's kind of put on. It's a little bit, not presentational, but it is a little bit of kind of an idea. I don't know how to describe this better, but I feel like as the, you know, when you compare something like this to something like Octopus's Garden, you know, that's very clearly who Kermit is, and it's very much not a departure from Kermit's spirit or Kermit's character, but him singing Lydia the Tattooed Lady, it doesn't, you know, feel very Kermit-y to me. And obviously it's only the first couple of episodes, so why would it be? But I just think it's interesting, again, how they're just playing. They're seeing, you know, different things that work. And I'm not even saying it doesn't work. I'm just saying this is another one of those moments where you just see them testing stuff. In this number, Lydia is played by a pig, a very tattooed pig, obviously, the Tattooed Lady. She's in this bikini. It's not raunchy. It is definitely a little bit more adult than I would have remembered. There's definitely a flirtatious nature to Kermit and this pig. I am obsessed with this concept that Kermit has a thing for pigs, and it's very planted early on, obviously, with this being only the second episode that they filmed. And so there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of moments in this that are very risque, if you want to say. There's a moment when she kind of, you know, she gives a little twerk, you know. Lydia the Pig gives a little twerk, you know, a nice little 1976 twerk. Definitely a nice little booty shake. And there's even a moment, okay, I really need to know this, and if anybody out there can tell me, there's a moment when they make her roll her tummy. Like, she does like a belly roll, and it is incredible. And I have zero clue how they made that happen. I doubt that it was any kind of like cable or mech. Maybe it was a mech. I don't know how they did it, but it was amazing. It's so good. But the song itself, Lydia the Tattooed Lady, was written by Harold Arlen and E.Y. Harburg. It was actually for the Marx Brothers film At the Circus, and it was performed by Groucho Marx. A very classic song done on the map. A very classic song done on the Muppet Show. It is featured on many albums and compilations and stuff like that. This is a very, very iconic piece as well. One thing that is very interesting is that this was actually one of Jim Henson's favorite songs. if you haven't seen the Jim Henson Memorial on YouTube, prepare thyself. It is very emotional. But there is a sequence where the Muppet performers, Dave and Frank, Dave Goles, Frank Oz, Jerry Nelson, Kevin Clash, Steve Whitmire. I don't think Louise is up there during this moment. I think she comes on for another moment, but it's kind of the core Muppet guys. And they sing a medley of Jim's favorite songs. And one of them is Lydia the Tattooed Lady, and it's Kevin Clash's Elmo singing it. And it's a really sweet moment. I've provided a link to the entire medley in the show notes below as well. And again, prepare thyself. You will weep. It's just so hard not to. That'll be a Muppet history thing that we get into one day, just how the entire memorial, how Jim Henson's death in general was just a really sudden, unexpected, and kind of freak thing that happened, and how quickly they were able to put together this unbelievably beautiful and incredible memorial is really such a testament to how much people loved him. But anyway, at the end of this bit, Piggy has a moment where Piggy and Kermit meet up, and Kermit goes, "Well, have you met Lydia?" And she goes, "No, have you met my fist?" And she decks him, just completely punches him. And it's not a high up. It's so much more subtle and just so much more like, and Kermit obviously just, you know, knocks over. And this idea that Piggy's so violent and so upset at everything Kermit does that does not involve her is just absolutely hysterical. And even though the character is not fully formed yet, you know, she hasn't found that really like kind of psychotic nature to her with the hi-ya and all of that stuff, this moment is just such a nice glimpse, and it's so funny. So we move out of that, and we start going into the backstage plot, into our first kind of running gag. Gonzo is kind of begging Hilda. Again, Hilda is a character played by Aaron Oscar, who is kind of the show's resident costumer or seamstress, and seamstress. And Gonzo wants Hilda to fix his teddy bear. And Hilda's like, "No, you know, that teddy bear is ugly. It's gross. It's disgusting. Also, don't you think you're a little bit too old to be carrying a teddy bear?" And Gonzo says this great line: "You think I'm emotionally mature enough to move up to a Raggedy Ann?" Again, the jokes are just so good. The jokes are so smart. But Fozzie kind of overhears this, and the way that they're referring to the teddy bear is just by the bear. And so Fozzie thinks that, you know, everybody, you know, that they're talking about him. So the running gag is formed where basically anytime somebody is referring to the bear, Fozzie overhears and thinks it's about him. And Fozzie basically gets to a point where he's going to quit. It all gets cleared up in the end. But it's a really great running gag. After this, we go into the Swedish chef. The Swedish chef is preparing. Oh my God, the Swedish chef is preparing meatballs, and the meatballs are a little bit bouncy. That's the one, a bouncy meatball. He makes these like kind of bouncy meatballs by accident, and decides, well, you know what, the only rational thing to do is to take out a tennis racket and start hitting all of the balls. And eventually he gets into a match with Statler and Waldorf, which, of course, Waldorf proceeds to say 15 love after Statler hits one of the meatballs back. We go back into another backstage sketch, and we get into Wayne and Wanda. You know what's really funny? I can't say Wayne and Wanda without saying it like Sam the Eagle, like Wayne and Wanda. Oh my God. Please welcome Wayne and Wanda. I think it's also the fact that Sam is such a regal force, and he is so conservative in nature that the idea of him getting excited of like Wanda, it's the idea of Sam getting excited is a very, very funny thought to me, and I hope it was to them as well.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, Suf's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So we see Wayne and Wanda. This sketch is the first thing that they kind of filmed with Wayne and Wanda, I believe. And the characters are so perfectly defined. Like, nothing about these two characters change from the moment that they are introduced to how we know them today. They're these two, obviously, very dramatic and very, I've talked about this before, obviously, but Wayne and Wanda are really funny characters. I love their skits. But in this in this sketch or this scene, you know, they're just talking trash about Connie Stevens, basically, because they're these divas who just want to go on. And then Connie Stevens overhears them. And they run back into their dressing room, and that kind of transitions into Connie Stevens meeting up with Kermit backstage. The show in this episode, I will never say it moves slow, but that sequence where, you know, Connie sees Wayne and Wanda, and then she kind of moves away and is like, oh, where's Kermit? And then Kermit meets with her, and then, you know, the rest of the sketch follows. They get into a rhythm later on that becomes very, you know, a lot quicker. Much quicker, much more, not louder, faster, funnier, but definitely faster and definitely funnier. And it's just interesting. So there's a great moment when they're about to go into the song that Connie Stevens is going to sing. And you know, Kermit is like, you know, we got you these great backup singers and these monsters, these full-bodied monsters walk out, and it's the mutations, which we talked about back in the last episode with Sandy Duncan. That great joke of like, well, they're not the Temptations, and Kermit goes, no, they're the mutations. Again, really, really great joke. The you know, then goes into the Connie's first number, Teenager in Love, and Kermit introduces her in this very kind of 50s, you know, jockey radio kind of way. And it's not something we expect from Kermit. It's not something we usually see. But it's fun. It's a fun little thing. The number begins, and it's this very, you know, classic 50s, I don't know, sock hop, is that what you say? I feel like I'm going to get... I don't know when the sock hops were, but this is like a very classic 50s, you know, kind of greaser, you know, kind of song. Or not greaser, but that era, you know what I mean? So Teenager in Love, it's an old school jam, you know, from the 50s, late 50s, though. Doc Pomus and Mort Schumann, but was originally sung by Dion and the Belmonts. Again, original recording of the song in the show notes in case you want to hear it. Fun tune. We see the mutations. It's a really fun song. Towards the end, they start kind of, you know, fighting with each other because they want the spotlight. Fun fact, this is the only number where we hear the mutations sing. From this point forward, the mutations become primarily silent. They technically sing in Nice Girl Like Me in... the Sandy Duncan episode, but that's arguable. But this episode for Teenager in Love is the only number where they're specifically these characters are singing. Fun song, you know, cute ending. Connie Stevens is really wonderful presence, and her energy is so interesting. I was saying earlier that the Lydia episode is a little bit more the Lydia number a little flirtatious. I think this whole episode is a very, very flirtatious episode. And if you know, going back to what I was saying before, Jim's desire to kind of not be associated with a children's television show performer by, you know, because he was on Sesame Street, which I think was another reason he possibly did Land of Gorch on Saturday Night Live. But then realizing that kind of humor, you know, that really kind of vulgar and risque humor was really not his jam. You can still see a lot of it being explored in this episode. Connie is very, like, incredibly flirtatious in this whole episode, especially with Kermit. There's a lot of tickling of the spine for Kermit, and you know, she's very affectionate with him. And Connie's energy is a rather flirtatious energy throughout the show in general. And I only say this because I just think it's an interesting thing to kind of see consistently play throughout the show. And that's something that, you know, you're going to notice with a lot of these shows is that, you know, kind of like with Rita Moreno, how she's kind of has that one type of the angry Hispanic woman. And obviously it's a stereotype that, you know, there are problematic, you know, roots and things within it, but it's kind of what Rita Moreno made her career off of, and types in general are just a very interesting thing because types are based off of stereotypes and caricatures and archetypes, and how we as a society perceive them is a whole other conversation. But again, it's just a very interesting thing to kind of go back and see these shows that were made in the 70s and, you know, kind of really take a kind of deeper and more analytical look. You know, performers of those days, you know, a lot of performers, the idea of being transformative or being, you know, a chameleon wasn't a thing. It was like they had a thing that they were really, really good at, and that's what they built their career on. And there's obviously a lot of sex appeal with Connie Stevens, and it's interesting to see how they're able to shape and morph that to make it work for this episode as well, for something that is supposed to be family-oriented while still playing on kind of the thing that I'm guessing Connie Stevens kind of made her career off of. So yeah, and it's going to be fascinating to kind of observe that with all different kinds of guest stars. But, you know, we're mostly going to be seeing it with the women, because in those days, men were definitely allowed to be a little bit more chameleon-like, and women had a much harder time, you know, being versatile or being allowed to be versatile, if I should say. And so that's just going to be something interesting that I kind of look out for. We go into another sequence with Gonzo and Kermit and the teddy bear, and Fozzie over here is there's a mention of Gonzo calling the bear moldy looking, and Fozzie goes, wow, only Gonzo wants me around here and he thinks I'm moldy looking. we go out of that and we go into At the Dance. Great bit. They're finally making Dr. Teeth makes a joke about how they're, you know, classing the place up, and his partner goes, why do you say that? Well, they're making the rats wear neckties. These puppet rats just have neckties on. Great. I mean, At the Dance is always full of great bits. We then go into the UK spot, which is Sergeant Floyd Pepper singing Ain't Misbehaving. Man, what an iconic Floyd moment. I say this about so many things, but this is really, really one of my favorite moments of Floyd and of, you know, anything Electric Mayhem or Electric Mayhem adjacent on the show. Jerry Nelson isn't credited in this episode, even though he performs Ain't Misbehaving. So the way that worked, Jerry didn't film episodes 101 through 103 and I believe 111 through 115. Yes, thank you, notes. 111 through 115, he chose to spend some time with his daughter. Jerry is obviously the performer of Sergeant Floyd Pepper, and I mean, just in general, Jerry was a genius performer, and this performance obviously proves that. But the thing about Floyd is not that he's just cool, but he is soul. Like, everything about Floyd to me is what I love about music. Everything about the Electric Mayhem in general is what I love about music, and Floyd especially in Ain't Misbehavin', he really just encapsulates that really kind of free-flowing and loose aspect that you get when you're listening to something like Game Misbehaving, or when you're listening to jazz or good music. And Jerry was so wonderful about infusing all of that into this character, and he is such a full character. And yeah, so, I mean, obviously, A Misbehaving by Fats Waller, very classic black artist. I lost my train of thought about the Jerry Nelson thing. So this is the UK spot, which, as I said before, we're not always in the US edits of the episodes. But this UK spot was actually filmed a little bit later, and they incorporated it because Connie Stevens didn't air until a little bit later. And so Jerry's not credited in this episode, even though he does that. But it's an excellent moment in the show that I really, really love, which is why I keep coming up speechless about it, apparently. One of the things that I really, really loved were some of the camera shots in this number, which I don't really see in a lot of the show. I think they get a lot more direct and kind of follow a little bit more traditional variety show kind of camera style. But there are some shots of a close-up on Floyd's bass and Zoot's guitar. And, you know, there's some different angles that really get a kind of... abstract looked at how the number is performed, and that contributes to how the essence of cool is really played upon, and the lighting, and this is one of those moments where I really am blown away by Henson's artistry and by what they were doing on The Muppet Show, which I think can seem trivial, but I think was pretty revolutionary. You know, you have this moment. I listen to something like this, and it's the same feeling that I get, you know, if I was in a jazz club in New Orleans, or if I, you know, went to see a really good band in New York. Like, they really encapsulated what the experience is when you go see a really, you know, sick band. And from something as simple as just like changing the camera angle or having the light be a certain way, and it really makes such a huge difference. So go back and watch that number again. It's so good. Also, if you're curious, provided a link to the original recording of Ain't Misbehaving by Fats Waller. Classic song. Just, you know, classic. Everybody should know Ain't Misbehaving if you don't. So yeah, we move out of Ain't Misbehaving and we go into the talk spot. In the talk spot, interestingly enough, it's a talk spot, but it goes into kind of a musical number. Connie ends up singing Close to You, as originally made famous by the Carpenters. Close to You was written by Burt Bacharach and Hal David, originally recorded by the Carpenters, Karen on lead, Richard on harmonies, obviously. A huge, huge hit in the 70s, so this was a great song for them to do. And you know, it's a really sweet moment where Connie sings to Kermit and sings to Fozzie. Again, really this, like, kind of flirtatious nature. And I think the reason I'm harping on this so much is not necessarily for Connie's sake, because I'm not trying to say anything about what Connie's stance is as a woman performer and the things, you know, the tropes that she used so that she could become successful. I think it's just more interesting that, you know, Jim Henson was really a kind of adamant believer that his material was for everybody. And I think what's interesting to me is that there is such a emphasis of the flirtatious nature between Kermit and between Connie. And I think there was in a lot of ways, they were kind of trying to make Kermit this kind of Johnny Carson, Dick Cavett kind of, you know, host character so that he could be up there with these guys, the Ed Sullivan type, you know. And so I wonder if that kind of played into it, like really making Kermit the male lead and like, let's make him desirable. Let's make him, you know, let's make him a frog who, like, you know, every time a lady guest comes to the show, he puts the moves. He's really, you know, I'm just curious about that, because then we don't really see it as much throughout the rest of the show, which I think is a very smart move for many, many reasons, but it is something that as I'm watching the episode, I'm just like, this is so fascinating for them to kind of experiment with this. And I brought up the sex and violence thing earlier, or I didn't bring up the sex and violence thing earlier. What I was saying was earlier, you know, Jim's really desire to kind of be, to not necessarily be associated with, you know, children's performing, which is why he created the title, The Muppet Show, Sex and Violence, for ABC. Even though I think they realized that sex and violence kind of was a pretty big step in a direction that they didn't necessarily want to go, I wonder if there was a lot of things that they pulled from there that they eventually kind of tried to keep around in the actual edit of the show that we see now in terms of the episodes and how they were filmed. Just something interesting. But anyway, Fozzie comes in halfway and you know, he gets a little jealous that that Connie and Kermit are kind of having this moment, and he wants some loving too. He wants some flirting too. And so Connie kind of sings to him as well, and you can hear in this number the kind of deeper voice that Frank was using originally for Fozzie. Everybody reach for the floor. That kind of How is my John Wayne impression? Oh my god, that justification is so smart to me. But anyway, you can hear that kind of that really deep voice in this number when he's singing, and it's really funny. It's a really sweet moment, and I love these kind of moments on the show when the guest star and Kermit kind of get to have like a private moment and just kind of, you know, sing. A really great example of this is when Debbie Harry and Kermit sing Rainbow Connection. It's a really, really fun moment. Another interesting tidbit about this number is that this is actually the only talk spot, again, early on, that features a couch or a love seat instead of kind of the famous wall and chair. I've got nothing else on that. That's just something I noticed. There's no other episode that features kind of a couch or a love seat. And it's just really interesting. But with this song specifically, they actually ended up performing this again, which has happened a couple times where they'll do a song in the early seasons and then do it again later on. They performed this song as a full musical number in the fifth season for James Coburn's episode. And they do it on Muppets Tonight. I mean, it's a very famous song. They did it on Muppets Tonight. The Muppets Tonight sequence is hilarious. Again, in the show notes, because you have to watch it. Johnny Fiamma is played by Bill Beretta. it's the John Goodman episode, and Johnny Fiamma decides that he's gonna have somebody from the audience come have dinner with him on stage as he sings to her. And so Sal, the monkey played by Brian Henson, grabs this random woman from the audience named Clarissa, as played by Jerry Nelson, and she is so uninterested in being up there. She's upset about everything. The first thing she says is, I don't even like his music. They go sit down at the table, and Sal's like the waiter, and he pulls up a menu, and Johnny Fiamma's like, what's the special? And Sal's like, it's the veal. And he goes, oh, veal, the meat of love. And in the middle, not even in the middle, as soon as Johnny starts singing, Clarissa goes, I don't care much for veal. I don't like the way it's raised. It's absolutely ridiculous. And again, another one of those moments where, like, it is such a classic Muppet sketch that they end up doing in the late 90s. And it just has that very classic flair of just Muppet foolishness. So that's in the show notes if you want to see that. But this song is obviously very popular, and the Muppets use it a lot. We get out of Close to You, and we go into another sequence backstage where it's Scooter and Gonzo talking about the teddy bear, and Fozzie overhears again. Scooter has a line where he says, he's funny. Every time I look at him, it makes me want to laugh and laugh and laugh, and I think he's just great. And then Gonzo says, like, but maybe a new bear would be nice. And, Scooter's like, yeah, a new one would be nice too. And then of course Fozzie says, the bear can barely bear it, folks. So cheesy, so good, so good, so good. Leaning into the cheese, yes. We get out of that and we go into a great bit. This is such a good bit. First of all, Zoot is one of the best characters that is so rarely utilized, and I wish he was used more often. Dave Goles' performance of Zoot is so damn funny. And again, another completely fully realized character who barely says anything. You know everything you need to know about Zoot just from the way that he looks, the way that he sounds, the fact that he plays a saxophone, and he sounds like this. Like, you know everything about Zoot. And this bit, Nigel is an interesting character. So many non-sequiturs happening. Nigel is a character that kind of debuted in the Muppet Show Sex and Violence pilot when they were kind of not sure if they really wanted Kermit to be the host. They kind of wanted him to be a part of the rep of Muppets. They tested out this character of Nigel to see if he would be a funny, kind of a good host. It did not work. But Nigel then kind of transitions into the band leader or the conductor of the Muppet Show band. And in this, you know, Nigel comes and tells Zoot, you know, you're going to play this great little number. Zoot is very reluctant. And he has this fantastic line right before he starts playing. And he goes, "Forgive me, Charlie Parker, wherever you are." And then starts going into this solo. And it's not even really a solo. He's just playing one note every time. Halfway through, Manamana comes in with a bell so that he can provide percussion. And it gets into a thing where, you know, he's hitting the bell, and then out of nowhere he starts hitting the music stand. Then he hits Zoot's saxophone. Then he punches Zoot in the face. And it all goes to a head, and Zoot basically blows him up with his saxophone. So funny. Muppet violence is so funny always. There is... that's a dramatic... Well, I don't know. I don't know if there's anything funnier on the Muppets than Muppet violence. And that can range from a lot of things. Muppet violence is very specific. It's not like gruesome or bloody. It's a very, you know, it's clear that it's a bunch of foam hitting each other. That's part of what makes it funny. But it also ranges. There's like, you know, a hi-ya from Piggy or somebody getting blown up. You know, penguins flying, chickens being thrown. You know, there's all kinds of Muppet violence that's just funny. And the combination of the sound effects, specifically in this number, of any kind of hitting and the sound effects that they found to match up with it just make it absolutely hysterical. This is one of my favorite moments in the whole show. So that's really great. Next we have, oh my God, they really knock it out of the park with some of these bits. Next is Gonzo's act. And Gonzo stays so true to himself. He is just a weirdo. He is a straight weirdo, and I love how much they are so dedicated to that idea. Gonzo grows a tomato plant while he plays the overture of 1812 on the violin. And the best part about this entire sketch is the fact that it lasts literally 5 seconds. It does not go beyond 5 seconds. As soon as the camera goes backstage, you start hearing booing and Gonzo yelling at the audience. And my God, it is so funny. And the timing of a lot of the bits on the show are so smart because of that. And they really define that as the show goes on. I mean, they end up also like finding bits that they can really stretch out for entire episodes and stuff. But some of the bits that they have where it's just only a few seconds because that's how long the joke works. And they don't try to milk it. They don't try to make it more than it is. It's truly fantastic. This sketch is one of those moments. So that goes off. We go backstage. Fozzie quits. Fozzie decides he's quitting. Kermit kind of clarifies, no, we're talking about Gonzo's teddy bear and this and that. And everything gets resolved. Yay, yay, yay. Happy, happy, happy. He even tells Gonzo he doesn't have to get rid of the teddy bear. Hilarious. There's a moment where Fozzie is like, he gets so excited that he goes, I would love a raise. And the frog is like, no, but you can keep your job. It's great. We get into the Muppet News Flash, going back to the idea of like tiny bit, only short amount of time, but it works. The newsman receives a call from Washington, D.C. on the hotline, but the phone is actually like burning hot and he burns his hand. Lasts about 10 seconds. Hilarious. So stupid, but so good. Yeah, small bit, good bit. I love it. And then we go into the final sequence of the show. Bernie and Ert are here. Ert and Bernie are in the show from Sesame Street. Why? Who knows? There's no reason, but they're here. Fantastic, man. They have a couple moments where the Sesame Street gang comes onto the show. Later on, the Leslie Uggams episode, we'll see Big Bird, and then, you know, there's a sequence in season 5 where the entire Sesame Street Muppet gang shows up. And then, of course, you know, the most famous collaboration of all is Muppet Family Christmas, where the Sesame Street and the Fraggle Rock and the Muppets are all hanging out together. It's really fun to see, and this is something that they knew early on. Seeing the Sesame Street characters outside of the realm of Sesame Street is always so exciting for the performers and for the audience. It's so fun to get to see Ernie and Bert in kind of this variety show element, and them being incredibly meta about it, being very directly about like, we're usually counting numbers, or we're usually being very, it's different. I've never done a variety show, and they play on it frequently, which is really smart. And so, this whole bit is basically that Bert feels very afraid that they're going to want him to do an act on the show. And Ernie is like, well, Bert, I think you can. And he just needs the right clothes. So Ernie goes off and gets Bert a bunch of these clothes. And when he comes back on, Bert feels so amazed and is so inspired by what he's wearing that he burst out into some enchanted evening. Pretty soon, Connie Stevens runs out and, you know, he's serenading to her. They go into a dramatic, like, duet, like this beautiful duet. Absolutely hysterical. Bernie Sanders. That's who I was talking about. No, Bert. Bert really gets into it. Then, of course, it ends. Ernie comes back on stage and Bert goes, did I just make a complete fool of myself? And Ernie goes, yes, yes, you did. And Bert goes, take me home. I feel terrible. And that's it. There's no explanation. There's no reason why. There's no, you know, it's so funny. They're just there. They're there because they're there. Because they can be. They're the Muppets. Why wouldn't they be there? Too funny, man. And that's the end of the episode. We go into the end. God, that Muppet likeness comes back out, and it's horrifying, just absolutely terrifying. More flirting between Kermit and Connie Stevens. I've said this before, but man, that little suit that Kermit wears is so damn cute. It is so friggin' cute. I love the skirt. I love the suit. I'm not doing well today, am I? So that's the end of our episode with Connie Stevens. I hope you enjoyed. Guys, next week we're gonna be talking about Joel Grey, Broadway legend. Oh man, I love Joel Grey, and it's a great episode too. It was right after he, you know, made a stint on Cabaret, and it's really great. It's going to be a fun episode. In the meantime, make sure that you head to bpn.fm/Muppets to check out the official page for It's Time to Meet the Muppets podcast, where you can find all kinds of fun stuff, and you can find out other podcasts that the Broadway Podcast Networks produce. Be sure that you head to our Instagram page. Again, that is at @MeetTheMuppetsPod. Also known as at Meet the Muppets Pod. Give us a follow. Give us a comment shout out. Give a little message shout out. I want to interact with all the people who are listening to the show. Make sure you share with your family and friends. Make sure you rate, comment, and follow / subscribe to the show. Please, please. I would love to get some sponsors so that I could make money. I would like to make money talking about the Muppets. So please share this as much as you can so that we can get, because that's the real reason I'm here. I'm not here because I love the Muppets. I'm here because I want to make money. Also, be sure that you are headed to Tough Pigs. I was going to say Tough Pigs and the Muppet Mindset, like I've been saying for the past few episodes, but they had recently announced that they are merging together. So fantastic. Please go follow Tough Pigs for all of their wonderful information. Head over to Muppet Wiki for more in-depth information. Head over to Jim Henson's Red Book, which you can actually find if you just simply search Henson Red Book or Jim Henson Red Book on Google, prepared by the Jim Humpany. It's been a day, y'all. Prepared by the Jim Henson Company Archives, the Red Book was kind of a log of activities or a diary or a journal of sorts, and the Henson Company Archives kind of broke them down, and there's a lot of great information, and there are so many different ones there. If you don't own the book, Jim Henson Imagination Illustrated, this is a really great resource if you want to read some really cool stories about the filming of the Muppet Show, filming of the Muppet movie, some of the specials, Sesame Street, all kinds of different stuff. Make sure that you are following Muppet History on Twitter and on Instagram. They are now joining Joshua Galipsy, who runs the Muppet History page, is joining the podcast ranks amazingly with the Muppet History podcast. So be sure to go check that out. Other podcasts you should look into is Puppeteers, hosted by Cam Garrity and Adam Krutinger, Below the Frame by Matt Vogel, Under the Puppet by Grant Pachoco, and of course, Getting Filled Up by Dan Becker and Nate Beagle. Yeah. Guys, thank you so much. I hope you are having a really fun time listening to this. I'm loving doing this show. Hit me in the comments on Instagram or wherever you can find me. If you find me on Twitter, hit me up there as well. Tell me what you like about the show. Tell me what you don't like about the show. Just tell me what you feel. Tell me what you feel. Until next time, it's time to meet the Muppets. Thank you.
We're moving right along. Let's get this show out on the road.
Show on the road!
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.